The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
Welcome back to the Frank Sontag Show. Thank you for joining us. We're going to spend another moment or two on the previous hour's topic, and then this hour we have a lot of other information to cover. FBI director has spoken about the death of Kevin Sicknick, the Capitol police officer who died on January the 6th, and his disclosure information is very strange, and we want to give you that update because we've talked about Kevin Sicknick. Also, we are witnessing the beginning of modern-day book burning. If you don't know what Amazon's doing, we'll cover that story. And there's a genocide continuing to go on in China right now, and our new administration is looking the other way. We need to talk about that as well. Very, very important. All right, we do have a few callers left on the screen. I'll take a couple calls. I also want to circle back and share a little bit more what Ken Graves had to say about the mask wearing. But let me take Cynthia in San Diego. This is a very important point to be made. Cynthia, you're on the Frank Sontag Show.
Thank you, Frank. This is the first time I've heard your show, and I just want to say the truth shall set us free, and I thank you for the courage to say the truth. You have everything that you've said is absolutely having to do with, for instance, the carbon dioxide and the lack of that. Oxygen is one of the main things that we need. We need the sun. We need oxygen. But as a clinical nutritionist, I was just curious from the very beginning why they didn't tell us how to boost our immune system. Simple things we can do like vitamin C, D3, zinc. These are more powerful than cutting off our oxygen with a mask. And then singing is one of the things that's very, very healing. And going to church, prayer actually helps to quiet the sympathetic nervous system and help boost the immune system. Fear, when they are stirring up all this fear, what that does is that causes a sympathetic system, and that is a fight or flight, which actually creates stress and depletes your immune system. The other thing that concerns me is what I'm seeing on TV now, the subliminal messages that are constantly being now aired on TV like commercials. Everyone's wearing masks. Yep. When I put a TV show on, and if they're wearing masks in the TV show, I immediately turn that off because, to me, that's from the pits of hell because we are created in God's image. And I agree with the gentleman that said, you know, We need to see each other's faces. We're not like a demonic people. We are a godly people, and we need to have faith in the Lord because He is there to heal and protect us. And we can't be focusing on what the government says. We have to make God the Lord of our life. And I have seen no evidence of any kind of illness in our church, and we have thousands of people going to our church. We're not wearing masks. We're singing, and we are feeling so good. I mean, I'm 71, and I haven't been sick at all. I just cannot believe it. But anyway, thank you so much for sharing, having the courage to share the truth. I really appreciate it.
Cynthia, thank you for your call. Thank you for sharing. Appreciate you greatly. And thank you for bringing up the immune system. You know, we oftentimes don't even think about the immune system. Cynthia mentioned things like zinc and vitamin D. Do we take responsibility for our health? The Bible talks about our bodies are temples. Do we live accordingly? Boosting your immune system is of the essence. And fear, you talk about one of the single most ways in which you can dismantle your immune system. Live in fear for a while. Or I pray against that statement. Please don't live in fear. 888-528-2557. One last thought, and then we're going to move on. I've got a lot of other information to share with you. Pastor Ken Graves is senior pastor of Calvary Chapel, Bangor, Maine. I believe this is a segment where he talks about mask wearing and about some specific medical studies. This is Pastor Ken Graves.
Just as this fire here was kindled, it was ignited, it must continue to be fueled. And you and I have been witnesses. We have witnessed the fears of our fellow citizens being stoked, being stirred, continually reminded, every single expression of media. You can't even listen to local talk radio without every single advertisement, every single business, in one way or another, addressing the danger. Words like safety. Every single business, I don't care if they're selling cars, they're going to tell you about the safety of the buying experience, the social distancing, all of the necessary expressions to continually remind you that there is this dreaded plague that threatens to take so many lives. The fact is that all they have to talk about right now are cases. Cases. How many new cases? How many new cases? Herd immunity is happening. There's a virus. It's contagious. Most people get it and get over it relatively quickly. The numbers that have been thrown at you are lies. And every single news channel screen showed you a running tally of the dead. And they were lying. Even the numbers were lies. But they were fueling the fire they ignited in the heart of our people. They have been continually fueling that fire, continuing every single day with every single tool at their disposal to throw more fuel on that fire, to make you afraid, to make you believe that you're in grave danger. And if you will just trust them, the few that have come to power, trust them, just surrender your freedoms to them. They'll get you through all of this. We're all in this together. We'll get through this. But we won't get through it and still be us. If we, in fact, surrender our freedom, we surrender our whole identity, who we are.
That clip actually was not specifically about masks, but I think if ever there was a clip that we needed to hear, it was that. Especially in relation to the previous call. About the way we live in fear. It's been, in 1 week, it'll be 1 year. How much more are we going to sit and take and believe? And again, I'm not saying we are to live irresponsibly. I'm not here to say we outrightly dismiss what we hear. But there comes a time when if we're willing to give up enough freedoms, and if you're indifferent to the undeniable hypocrisy of some of these positions, then that's on you, that's on me, that's on us. Maybe it's time for the church to rise up and say, enough's enough. And I can think of no better time than right now. 888-528-2557 are the numbers to call into the program. So there was a time in history through despotic regimes where they tried to silence any dissenting minds, any viewpoint that went against the narrative that they're pushing about control, totalitarianism. Book burning was a popular way, especially silencing religious freedom. Now, there's something going on right now you all should be aware of if you don't know by now. As Amazon quietly goes about banning books under the category that they say is hate speech, to me, this is as if modern-day book burning is absolutely here. Last night on Tucker Carlson, he interviewed Douglas Murray, one of the best on this topic.
Just in time for Black History Month, Amazon has purged a documentary on Supreme Court Justice Clarence Thomas called Created Equal, Clarence Thomas in His Own Words. Amazon has also erased several other films and books, including the book When Harry Became Sally on transgenderism. There's a lot to unpack here, but basically the world's largest bookseller is banning books. Where are we going with this? Douglas Murray is one of the smartest people watching our current moment. He, of course, is a best-selling author. He joins us tonight to assess. Douglas Murray, thanks so much for coming on. The world's largest bookseller banning books. What's next after this, do you think? Where is this heading?
This is exactly a big tech fearer's worst nightmare. Many of us worried for years about the growth of big tech, the way in which large companies would end up taking over everything. They would not face monopolies and mergers commissions like they would have done decades ago. They just took over everything. And some of us always worried, what will they do once they're in that position? And we're starting to see what they'll do. You know, because increasingly you can't go to your local independent bookseller because Amazon made them go out of business years ago. During the pandemic, the remaining bookshops that exist quite often just weren't allowed to open. So Amazon had another great advantage. And here they are at this moment of almost complete dominance in their trade, deciding now to flex their ideological muscles.
I mean, for Amazon to say that during Black History Month, you're not allowed to hear from one of the most famous Black Americans on earth because his views aren't exactly the views we think he should have. I mean, that's very ominous to me.
The whole thing is ominous. Amazon recently quietly rewrote some of its codes of practice that, of course, talked about the usual things you always hear. We've got to prevent hate speech and offense and similar things. So it's offensive for Ryan Anderson to write a book which questions the prevailing gender ideology. It's offensive to suggest, for instance, as he does, a conservative Catholic commentator, that it's not great to, for instance, give children life-altering drugs and medication that, among other things, will make lots of them infertile. This is all exactly what we expected. Amazon turns out to be yet another big corporation, big tech, basically enforcing the prevailing ideology of the time. And the worry some of us have is what happens next? Ryan Anderson's book, I read it when it came out. It's a good book. It's on an important subject. Which books are they going to hive away next? Will it be Candace Owens's books next? Will it be yours? Will it be mine? Once they decide that they know what hate is and they know what good is, they will just be another big company enforcing the same tedious and wrong ideology on the whole of America. And we will be expected to suck it up, and we shouldn't.
Douglas Murray has written a book called The Madness of Crowds. And to build upon some of what the exchange was last night on Tucker Carlson, let's go to the source. Let's go to Amazon and their exact statement as applied to the idea of, well, certain books will not be tolerated under the category of hate speech. A spokesperson from Amazon said the following, quote, "As a bookseller, we provide our customers with access to a variety of viewpoints, including books that some customers may find objectionable. That said, we reserve the right not to sell certain content as described in our content guidelines for books. All retailers make decisions about what selection they choose to offer, and we do not take selection decisions lightly." End quote. Sounds really good. You think, well, that's reasonable. That's balanced. They should be able to do what they want, you know, their own company. But here's part of the problem. They're a monopoly. Think of your local bookstore, your little small bookstores don't exist anymore, even your Barnes and Nobles and brick and mortar. What do you think has happened to Amazon over the last year? Do you have any idea? And I didn't till I read this article earlier. How much Amazon is worth? Now, again, as Douglas Murray said, I think this should concern you when you talk about monopolization or control. Amazon has been estimated to be a $1.5 trillion company. They also changed the rules sometime after August of last year without telling their customers. Previously, Amazon said, quote, "We prohibit products that promote, incite, or glorify hate or violence towards any person or group," end quote. But that policy explicitly applied not to books. That was kind of their policy in general. Its book policy had no mention of anything related to quote-unquote hate speech. This is according to a page archived in August of last year. It mentioned that Amazon reserved, quote, "the right not to sell certain content, such as pornography or other inappropriate content," end quote. The Amazon spokesperson wouldn't respond to questions on when the policy was adopted, what constitutes quote-unquote hate speech, and how Amazon's customers were informed about the change. So it's easy now in their content guidelines for books, including a section called offensive content, they broad stroke this idea of hate speech. But what does that mean? Ryan Anderson can't have his book When Harry Became Sally on transgenderism and speaking out against it? I think the writing's pretty much on the wall, right? And yet we can't get explanations from Amazon. Why is the book being banned? They refuse to say which aspect of their content policy violates Ryan Anderson's book. It violates after 3 years of not violating that policy. All of a sudden, it violates their policy. By the way, if you don't know Ryan Anderson's book, When Harry Became Sally, it argues that the push to encourage individuals who feel like a different gender to undergo sex change procedures is driven by ideology rather than sound medical advice. Book just kind of disappeared around the same time that Anderson published an op-ed piece in the New York Post critical of a bill pushed by the Biden administration. (888) 528-2557. We are going to break, and in the rest of the hour, there is a new recall effort that it's not our governor. It happens to be L.A. County District Attorney George Gascon. Many of you have emailed me about him. We'll talk about that recall effort. Also, the FBI say they will not disclose the cause of death of Officer Brian Sicknick. We know what happened on January 6th. At least we're told what happened on January 6th. It's a weird story. We'll share that with you. And President Biden refuses to refer to China's genocide on the Uyghur people. He's looking away. There's a commentary about Bill Clinton in Rwanda, where 800,000 Tutsis and Hutus were slaughtered. And the then Clinton administration refused to use the word genocide because it would force them to do something. It looks as if the Biden administration is doing the same thing as applied to the horrors of what's going on in China. All that and much more, 888-528-2557. More of this, the Frank Sontag Show, next. Welcome back to the Frank Sontag Show. Thank you for joining us. Earlier today on Capitol Hill, during a Senate hearing, FBI Director Christopher Wray shared some information about the incident on January 6th and the death of Capitol Police Officer Brian Sicknick. That's important to share with you. Now, first of all, if you are not familiar, obviously January the 6th, we heard there was an insurrection, and depending on what you believe, you may actually believe the previous president somehow caused it, and yet there are other stories about pre-planned events, etc., all sorts of conflicting information. So first and foremost about the tragic death of Brian Sicknick. Again, I go to Tucker Carlson.
We do know that Ashley Babbitt was not holding a weapon when she was killed. Nevertheless, at the impeachment hearing this week, Congressman David Cicilline of Rhode Island described what happened at the Capitol as, quote, an armed insurrection. Watch.
He incited an armed, angry mob to riot. On inciting an armed insurrection against the United States government, an armed, angry, and dangerous crowd, armed violence against the government of the United States of America.
David Cicilline is a former mafia lawyer from Providence, so presumably he knows what it is to commit a felony with a firearm. Doubtless he does. There are no reports of rioters at the Capitol building that day discharging weapons or threatening anyone with a gun. So what exactly is David Cicilline talking about? Well, apparently he's referring to the death of Officer Brian Sicknick. In the hours after the riot, the New York Times reported that Trump supporters had brutally beaten Officer Sicknick to death with a fire extinguisher. The fire extinguisher, apparently, is the deadly weapon, the armed in the armed insurrection. Now, the news of Sicknick's death by violence was quickly picked up by countless other media outlets. Cable television anchors repeated and then amplified it.
Officer Brian Sicknick died after being hit in the head with a fire extinguisher during the hours-long attack.
They beat a Capitol Police officer to death with a fire extinguisher.
Officer Brian Sicknick died after being hit in the head with a fire extinguisher during the fight.
He died at the age of 42 after he was bludgeoned with a fire extinguisher.
Capitol Hill police officer beaten to death with a fire extinguisher by a white supremacist mob. It's horrifying. And that is the story they were telling. It's a story they still are telling. That account forms the basis of the myth that Democrats have constructed around January 6th. Sicknick's remains lay in state at the Capitol building. Streams of politicians, the very same people who just months before had told us that cops were racist by definition, those same people praised Brian Sicknick as a hero. They had finally found a police officer who served their political uses. Kamala Harris and her husband, for example, arrived to pay their respects, and as they did, they said not one thing about defunding the police. But in fact, the story they told was a lie from beginning to end. Officer Sicknick was not beaten to death, not with a fire extinguisher, not with anything else. According to an exhaustive and fascinating new analysis on Revolver News, there's no evidence that Brian Sicknick was hit with a fire extinguisher at any point during the day. None. No video, nothing. The officer's body apparently bore no signs of trauma. In fact, on the night of January 6th, long after rioters at the Capitol had been arrested or dispersed, Brian Sicknick texted his brother from his office. According to his brother, Sicknick said he'd been, quote, pepper sprayed twice and he was in good shape. 24 hours later, Officer Brian Sicknick was dead. How did Officer Sicknick die? The head of the Capitol Police Union has said he had a stroke, no cause given. More than that, we still don't know. Sicknick's body was cremated immediately. Authorities have refused to release his autopsy. No one has been charged in his death. No charges are pending. Whatever happened to Brian Sicknick was tragic, obviously. But it was also very different from what they have told us. They have lied about how he died.
So, earlier today on Capitol Hill, during a question and answer session with FBI Director Christopher Wray, Jack Phillips posts this story. Headline, FBI cannot disclose the cause of death of Officer Brian Sicknick. I'll read a little bit from this piece. The FBI, quote, cannot disclose the cause of death, end quote, of U.S. Capitol Police Officer Brian Sicknick after the New York Times and other news outlets either retracted or updated reports claiming he was killed by being hit with a fire extinguisher during the Capitol riots on January the 6th. FBI Director Christopher Wray responded to a question from Senator Chuck Grassley during a Senate hearing today about whether the agency has determined Sicknick's cause of death. Grassley noted, quote, conflicting reports, end quote, about his cause of death and whether there is a homicide investigation. Wray said, quote, there is an ongoing investigation into his death. Added that, I certainly understand and appreciate the keen interest in what happened to him, end quote. But despite Wray's testimony, it's still unclear whether the FBI does not know Sicknick's cause of death or whether the agency simply will not disclose it. Wray then stated that, quote, the investigation is ongoing. That means we cannot disclose the cause of death, end quote. When asked about, again, by Grassley about whether the FBI knows his cause of death, Wray said, quote, I didn't say that, end quote, and again repeated, the FBI cannot disclose the cause of death. As Tucker Carlson just shared, Sicknick's death was invoked a number of times by lawmakers in Congress during former Donald Trump's impeachment trial as they tried to portray the riots as an insurrection and resulted in the loss of lives, and that Sicknick was beaten by pro-Trump supporters during the riots. That narrative, as we reported on this program, received a major setback last week when Sicknick's mother, Gladys, said that her son was not hit on the head. Quote, he wasn't hit on the head, no. We think he had a stroke. We don't know anything for sure. We'd love to know what happened, end quote. As Tucker Carlson reported, Sicknick's brother also appeared to dispute the reports about his death in early January. Quote, my brother texted me last night and said, I got pepper sprayed twice, but I'm in good shape, end quote, said Ken Sicknick. Capitol Police said last week that the medical examiner's report on Sicknick's death is not yet complete. They said there were waiting toxicology reports and results, etc., etc. Meanwhile, FBI Director Christopher Wray continues to describe the incident as domestic terrorism, claimed it coincided with the rise of white nationalism and extremism in the United States. I'm not the first one to wonder, have our intelligence agencies gone off the rails too? God help us. 888-528-2557. When we think about the rule of law, and we'd like to think people in positions of authority will uphold the law, I cannot tell you how many of you have emailed me about L.A. County District Attorney George Gascon. Frank, when are you going to talk about this guy? Well, today's the day, because there's a recall campaign that has been announced. Let me share the information. Crime victims and law enforcement officials have announced they're launching a recall campaign against L.A. County District Attorney George Gascon, who we know his 2020 campaign was funded by George Soros with more than $2.4 million contributed to his campaign. Gascon ran for district attorney on a promise of turning the court system upside down and eliminating cash bail. The recall announcement comes on the heels of a motion filed last week in a double murder case seeking to disqualify Gascon for, among other issues, hiring a former public defender to write his youth justice policy when she was still a deputy public defender, representing criminal defendants, allegedly benefiting her criminal clients. Gascon ordered the double murder case to stay in juvenile court, despite that the perpetrator was 17 years old and only weeks away from his 18th birthday when he was arrested, which means the most he would get if convicted would be about 7 years in the murder of two young women. Organizers of the recall campaign plan to gather the signatures needed to file an intent to recall during a, quote, victim's vigil, end quote, at the downtown LA Hall of Justice. The recall effort needs valid signatures from 10% of registered voters in L.A. County. The actual number, around 590,000 people to qualify for the ballot. Organizers say they're actually going to aim for about 200,000 additional signatures in addition to the 590,000, which obviously can be thrown out for various reasons. You may or may not know, within weeks of being sworn in as L.A. County's district attorney, many reports in relation to Gascón said that he issued radical, unlawful, quote, special directives, end quote, commanding the deputy district attorneys of the L.A. County District Attorney's Office to violate California's constitution and laws. Some of those accusations. With respect to future cases, the special directives prohibits DDAs from charging mandatory criminal sentencing enhancements under the three strikes law, which California enacted to protect its citizens from previously convicted serious and violent felons. And with respect to pending cases, the special directives requiring DDAs to withdraw all pre-existing enhancement allegations for six different types of sentencing enhancements. These provisions are plainly illegal. DDAs cannot be commanded to violate the very sentencing enhancements that California law mandates. By the way, the Association of Deputy District Attorneys for L.A. County filed a civil suit against D.A. Gascón, asking that Gascón follow California state constitutional and statutory law. Their lawsuit, singular, targets four separate directives issued by the district attorney that ignore or violate state law. The recall effort cannot officially launch until March the 8th because a public official must be in office 90 days before a recall can be launched. Advocates, quote, will have 160 days to collect the necessary signatures, which again equals about 10% of the county's more than 5.8 million registered voters, or about 580,000 signatures, end quote. I will tell you this, as this recall effort is launched, you'll be hearing a lot more specific information on this program. When we continue, evidently, President Biden is turning a blind eye to genocide in China. Blatant hypocrisy from what he has said previously. We'll share that story next here on the Frank Sontag Show. Welcome back to the Frank Sontag Show. One stark, outrageous bit of information has just been passed along to me. I made mention of the January 6th riot at the Capitol. Something that, to my knowledge, I've not seen anywhere, especially in the mainstream. Now, again, we just talked about Capitol Police Officer Brian Sicknick, who lost his life. FBI Director Christopher Wray said they don't know what happened, even though there's all sorts of reports that he suffered a stroke. Listen to this one. For those that buy into the media's ongoing, former President Trump incited an insurrection, try this one on for size. On the evening of January the 5th, the acting Secretary of Defense, Christopher Miller, was at the White House with Chief of Staff Kash Patel. They were meeting with President Trump on an Iran issue, Miller has said. But then the conversation switched gears. Then President Trump, Miller says, asked how many troops the Pentagon planned to turn out the following day. That would be January the 6th. Miller responded that the president said, you're going to need 10,000 people, troops. He went on to insist that they were going to need 10,000 people. Guess who said no to the 10,000 troops? Nancy Pelosi. We'll leave it at that. In the 90s, when I was a new age, left-wing, progressive activist talk show host, When the slaughter was happening in Rwanda, I was very concerned. I supported human rights organizations like Amnesty International. The West Coast Regional Director, Magdaleno Rose Avila, was a dear friend of mine. Talked a lot about human rights abuses. Always been an issue I'm concerned about. Listen to this story. According to Fred Flights, who writes for the Center for Security Policy, it's not too late for President Biden to live up to his responsibility as the leader of the free world to make it clear to Beijing that there will be no business as usual with the United States until the Uyghur genocide ends. The Clinton administration chose not to call the mass murder of up to 800,000 ethnic Tutsis in Rwanda genocide because it felt the designation would legally require the United States to take action and because it feared political inconvenience. President Joe Biden is now facing a similar political conundrum with the Chinese government's ongoing genocide of ethnic Uyghurs in the particular region of, I believe it's pronounced Xinjiang. I may be wrong on that. Now it appears he's backing away from doing anything, just as the Clinton administration did nothing to stop the genocide against Africans. Flights writes, as the CIA analyst then, I personally witnessed President Clinton's shocking dereliction of duty, along with that of his aides, during the April 1994 mass murder in Rwanda. The Clinton National Security Council instructed the CIA not to use the specific word genocide to describe the killings. That was because the Clinton officials believed that the use of the word would compel the United States to take action under the 1948 Genocide Treaty, officially known as the Convention on the Prevention and Punishment of the Crime of Genocide. Even though Clinton officials had plenty of warning that mass killings in Rwanda could occur, it prevented the United Nations from acting in advance of the genocide. After it began, the Clinton administration still prevented the UN from acting because of the political damage the administration had incurred from the failed peacekeeping missions it promoted in Bosnia, Somalia, and Haiti. Bill Clinton later apologized for the way his administration mishandled the Rwanda genocide. Truth was, he passed the buck to his aides, claiming that he would have taken action had he known more about the situation. Although numerous experts and studies have proven that he was well aware that genocide was taking place, but decided to take no action and prevented other countries from doing so. The Genocide Convention does not require going to war. It provides numerous ways to hold genocidal governments accountable, including things like sanctions, travel bans, etc. Now, today, there is undeniable proof that the Chinese government is committing genocide against its Uyghur Muslim minority. The Essex Court Chambers in London, a group of distinguished British attorneys, recently provided the latest confirmation of China's genocide. In a 100-page opinion, they indicated that atrocities including mass incarceration, enslavement, torture, and rape are occurring right now. They said the opinion is a deliberate effort by the Chinese government to destroy the Uyghur community. What does that have to do with the current administration? Last August, the Biden campaign, when they were stumping to be president, stated in absolute terms that the Chinese government's persecution of the Uyghurs was genocide. Quote, the unspeakable oppression that Uyghurs and other ethnic minorities have suffered at the hands of China's authoritarian government is genocide, and Joe Biden stands against it in the strongest terms, end quote. Well, it now appears that President Biden does not plan to honor our obligation under the Genocide Convention concerning Beijing's atrocities against the Uyghurs. When questioned, you may have seen the audio and the video, it's pretty shocking. When raised about the Uyghur genocide, Biden said, well, it's an issue of, quote, different cultural norms, end quote. He added a comment that appeared to justify Beijing's persecution of the Uyghurs by claiming China has been victimized by, quote, the outer world, end quote, when it was not united, and claimed that the despotic regime is only trying to unify the country by creating a, quote, united and technically controlled China. I can't even get the words out. It's evil. The spin doctors and the damage control folks say, well, they think that the president made a gaffe when he misspoke. We will see what they do, if this administration will take action and speak out against the atrocities and the genocide of the Uyghur people. What might they do? Cease normal relations with Beijing until the genocide is stopped. By the way, there are some calling for the Biden administration to lead a global boycott of the 2022 Olympics in Beijing. Good luck on both of those. I don't want to sound cynical or pride-filled, but let's just say I'm not holding my breath to see this president speak out when it seems like when we talk about the relationship with China and the information and the allegations with Hunter Biden and the laptop and all the things we already know. But according to this author of this piece, Fred Flights, he says it's not too late for President Biden to live up to his responsibility as the leader of the free world to make it clear to Beijing that there will be no business as usual with the United States until the Uyghur genocide ends and those responsible for it are held personally accountable. As I've shared with other stories, rest assured, I will be following the story, and any updates or changes, I will be the first to say this publicly on the air. We, Lord willing, will be back tomorrow for another Frank Sontag show. If you have any comments, as many of you have already shared, I haven't gotten to my emails, you can share a confidential message about anything you've heard or anything you want to share at franksontag@kkla.com. On a much different note, this Sunday morning, I will be preaching at Legacy City Church, Josh Thompson's church in Studio City. If you're out and about in the area Sunday morning, go to their website for more information. And I think I'm going to preach in part about the life of Paul. Hope to see you there. I love Josh Thompson. I love what he's done at Legacy City and his leadership through all the lockdowns and all that he's done for that wonderful church, which is called Legacy City in the San Fernando Valley. This is the Frank Sontag Show.